Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals from the built environment, from health, recreation and the transport sectors, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, we talk to Bernadette Cowie, a leading walking activist and regional coordinator of the Way to Go programme in British Columbia. The interview was recorded while on two walks in the city of Vancouver in Canada in November 2007. The interview opens with Bernadette telling us about the Way to Go programme that was set up over 11 years ago.
And I'm the provincial coordinator for a programme called the Way to Go programme in British Columbia, Canada. And what we do is provide resources and information and support for communities in the whole province to promote walking and biking to school and other local sort of destinations, just as a way of reversing the trend that has been developing where parents drive their children everywhere. We're trying to interrupt their decision making and create opportunities and inspiration, really, to make a different set of choices. Well, the Way to Go program has as its audience parents, because they're making that set of choices. And what it is is a way of trying to give them as much of the important information that they need about safety and about the sort of focus and potential for walking in a child's life. But what we're seeing, and what we have seen for many years, is we're starting to reverse it here, but is this trend of parents driving more and more and more for shorter trips, local trips, neighborhood trips. Maybe it's convenient, maybe it seems more convenient. It's just this whole idea of always chauffeuring your children everywhere. And so our program sets up a set of resources and ideas and just a set of knowledge that people can have.
I asked Bernadette whether peer group pressure also played a part.
We moved in, you know, four blocks from the school. We thought, oh, well, we can walk to school. But then we saw that everybody was driving to school. And then we thought, oh, my goodness, well, everybody drives to the school. And so we had to turn that school around so that people were walking to that school. But it was because there was an idea that this culture of this school is that we drive. And so that's right. That's what a good parent does. And so now you need to turn that on its head. The same thing is true about, you know, sending your child on a bus. You know, when I started sending my children on a bus, I mean, I taught them how I took them. But, you know, people would say, oh, you've got your, you know, 12-year-old and your 9-year-old taking a bus and they have to transfer. And, you know, it was sort of as if that was quite negligent, really. What on earth was I doing? And it was that idea that I wasn't being a good parent, as opposed to somebody who was allowing children to develop important skills. These are the same kids that can now, you know, at 18 and 19, go to Thailand and maneuver themselves around the world, because you've got to learn your street skills somewhere, right? We did a pilot project, and there was a lot of demand for it, mostly from the traffic safety aspect. But then in the end, you know, parents start to see the other really good impacts of the work.
As an organisation, how many schools or school districts can you reach?
Well, we work with 60 school districts. There are 60 school districts throughout British Columbia, and we work with all of them. We work with all of, and as well as the independent schools, and we work with different districts in different ways. I mean, so if you're up at Haida Gwaii, we might be doing the pedestrian safety, because, you know, walking to school happens anyway, but we have to make sure the kids are safer. When you're working in a community where everybody's driving because it's the socioeconomic sort of base allows them all to have cars, and, you know, there's more cars per capita, then they tend to drive more. Then you're working at another end. You're working, you know, the pedestrian safety is one issue, but the other real issue is encouraging those parents to recognize that that's the best choice for their children and for their family in that sort of way. So it's really, you know, it's a social marketing thing, but it's changing the culture of what people believe or what they know to be a better way of being a parent or being in the community. I think we really do need for people to be doing this work, to be convincing just whole segments of the community that they need to get out of their their cars and they need to walk and they need to bike and they need to be much more in touch with both the urban environment and their natural environment. And I think schools is a very important place. I mean, everybody talks about, oh, the walk to school. I mean, why are they, you know, why is everybody picking on parents? And partly it's like the canary in the sort of coal mine sort of phenomenon, that we realize we have children who, you know, walk to school and say, you know, in grade six, well, I didn't know my way to school from home when they lived, you know, a kilometer from school, then we've got a problem. And I think that parents aren't understanding the impact of those incremental choices they make, what they take away from their kids. And so we do need people that do this work and that convince parents or give them the tools and the understanding and the insight as to how they might make a set of different choices. And I think that we need to sort of override that sort of auto-dependency at every level. So yeah, I want to continue to do it. It's just to figure out how to do that.
We stopped in a coffee shop when I asked Bernadette to tell us about the different issues and how the Way to Go program may have tackled them.
The first is the whole issue about parents making choices to drive their children so much more often and sort of wanting to protect them against things. And so after I'd started working very early on in this work in a community, and a mum called me up one day and she said, well, you know, this morning, you know, we walked the kids to school and it was a lovely day. And then towards the end of the day, it was just pouring rain. And I thought, oh, it's pouring rain. I've got to go pick up the children. They don't have any raincoats or anything. And then she said, stop. No, wait a minute. Let's see what happens. So she didn't pick up her children. So, you know, about 10 minutes later, the kids come singing in the back door, and they're singing, and they're soaking wet, and they're freezing cold, and they're all laughing, and they've all had a lovely walk home in the rain, and she makes them hot chocolate. And she realizes that one of the things that we do when we always, quote, protect our children is that we don't allow them to have experiences that are basic. The experience of getting wet and getting cold and being chilled and walking in the rain, we protect them from having that authentic and genuine experience. And that's not the kind of protection we want to have for our children. So I think that was really, for me, a really telling point for this mother. First of all, she wouldn't have been interrupted in her thinking if she hadn't had the program and people hadn't been thinking about making a different set of choices all the time. But she also was so amazed when she rang me up to say, you know, what are we blocking? What are we not allowing our children to have and experience and do in our quest to, quote, protect them? When in fact, that's real life and we want them to experience it. So that was very neat for me to sort of have. With the city of Surrey, we had a school that really, really wanted to take a template of a footstep and actually spray paint the best route to school so that the children would have a series of funny colored footsteps walking along. Well, the municipal municipality didn't want them to do it, and the engineers didn't want them, and they didn't want all of that. So we ended up having to have a special sort of dispensation in order to allow schools that had identified their best routes to indeed have the right to create a template and then spray paint on the pathway to school, on the best route to school, the series of footsteps. So it was a big concession. But it was great because, you know, they came around. Because otherwise they might do exactly what you said, was to see it as a subversive activity, right? We don't want, you know, people drawing on our sidewalks. But it's a way for a community to claim that space and to claim it as the best route for those children to want to walk along, right? And now what we were talking about, those mosaics, we had a school for International Walk to School Day a couple of years ago, and they made mosaics. And then they created from the different paths into the school the stepping stones. So that was their culmination of the International Walk to School Week, was that each of the classes had made stepping stones from each of the pathways in, which was quite lovely. And then they actually installed them on the school ground and on the way into the school ground. It was great. It was lovely. But that was a lovely way for them to have, like, that artistic experience of creating places to step. It's quite nice.
I asked Bernadette how the Way to Go project was funded.
It's not government. It's funded through like a non-profit organization, the Auto Plan Brokers and ICBC, which is the vehicle insurers for the province, but they do it under the auspices of the Auto Plan Broker Road Safety Program. And it's focused, they're focused on road safety. They really want to have this program into the schools because it's a prompt for teachers and parents to teach pedestrian education and to teach bicycle safety education. So that's what they care about. But if you are able to get parents to come along, then they can also understand that it's really good for your neighborhood, it's really good for your community, it's really good for the children's fitness, and it's, you know, you're reducing the use of the vehicle. There's lots of good other impacts of making that choice, but it's the big part is to make the social cultural change, and it's to convince people that they can make it, and that it's a good thing, that it's
what you've been doing and what you've achieved so far. You've achieved getting governments to absorb what you're doing and make what you're doing mainstream rather than marginal, so that
So
what's your role now? You know, that's what I'd say.
Exactly. Where do I want to go with that, and how do I want to see it through? Absolutely. Hi, Bonnie. Yeah, no, I think that's true.
I think it's affecting lots of people, is that, you know, the environmental and the sustainability and climate change has now become mainstream hot political topic.
Well, and fitness and health.
Absolutely.
How do we create real, genuine community?
And at the time, you know, 10, 15 years ago, that's what we were all trying to push and trying to get central government and provincial government and city government to accept and adopt. And now, in a sense, that's been achieved. What's the next stage?
Well, I think the next stage is for there to be core funding. I think that a lot of our programs here in Canada are not core funded. So we go from grant to grant or project money to project money, and we have to justify our position all the time, because even though the goals and objectives that are realized in our program are writ big goals and objectives of policy at government of every level, both, you know, in municipal and regional and provincial and national governments have all these goals and objectives that we meet, they don't really want to pay for it. I mean, they're quite happy for us to be out there doing it as little NGOs, but they're not really willing to sort of see it as core funded. They don't see it as part of the transportation system or, you know, or the environmental responsibility, or they don't get that these core, working in communities, the only way to make social and cultural changes in communities is to have people working hands-on, really. And that's a lot of labor. That takes a lot of time and energy, but that's how people change the decisions they make day to day. It's not a billboard project, really.
Yeah.
And that's expensive and needs continuing support. You can't just do it for 6 months and then disappear. It's got to have some longevity and some durability. So I think that we need to sort of figure out how to make that happen, certainly in Canada. That's our goal. That's really what we need to do, is to set up a system whereby it's recognized for what it can achieve, and it's not seen as something that's sort of sideways or edgy, but something that's basic to the way we support communities to make choices that are good for them. I'd also like to see a lot of younger people doing the work, because I think that they have insight and they have imagination, and they try things out that somebody, you know, who's been sort of trained and educated and experienced may not, you know. I think that so that's thing. But one of the things I would like to do is, we did do a DVD on pedestrian safety and bicycle safety last year, and I would like to do something that has some of that to it. I would like to do possibly like another film project that actually added to the kind of sense of what can be achieved or what that experience might be that children have. Something that has a bit more of some aspect of what, why people might want to make those changes, and maybe to do it in a form of a video or a film. I don't know. I'm not sure. That's just something I just thought about the other day. This is why this sort of like investigating happiness stuff that Helliwell talks about, and that Catherine O'Brien speaks about, is that let's look at what really works and see how we make that work. But I think that's a really interesting idea, because, I mean, my daughter's 22, almost 23 now, and so I have friends who were at the school when she was 5 and 6 and we were doing this work, and that has changed their life. When they go on holiday now, they'll go on a walking tour or a bicycle tour. I mean, it actually has made a difference in the kinds of choices they make for what they want to do, not just when they transport themselves, but when they recreate. I mean, it's really amazing. I had no idea, except for, you know, you're sitting around in a pub having a beer and somebody starts to talk about well, gee, after, you know, we did this program, these are the kinds of things we made choices about. So it can be pretty life-changing. Not just for the children and the walk to school, but for what you start to appreciate, what you start to recognize as authentic, really. Yeah, but not only in your relationship with your children, but also in your relationship to the way you want to kind of be in the world or experience the world.
Next, I asked Bernadette how important walking was in her life.
I'd like to walk a lot more. I mean, more than I do, and I do a lot. I mean, most of my social life is spent walking with people. I mean, when I choose to get together with somebody, we go for a walk. But because that's a lovely thing to do. I mean, you're walking through space and time, and there's conversations you can have when you're walking with somebody that you can't actually have in any other context, really. So it would be lovely to have a job that actually allowed you to walk as you work. I mean, that's part of the work you do, is just to walk. That's why this whole idea of this ministry of walking is very interesting, because it's a really magical thing. I mean, you know, we've just recently got a dog. We always had dogs, and then the last one died a few years ago. And you know, it's that sort of, oh, I've got to go out, I've got to take the dog, and then you're out there, and it's great. You know, you spend half an hour, 45 minutes, when you really thought you'd go around the block, but you just sort of become compelled to walk. It's great. It's lovely. It's very therapeutic. Remember the fellow at the conference at Walk 21, where he spoke about the importance of those walks to just change the way you think, because it's a different kind of an activity. It's great.
Finally, I asked Bernadette to tell us about the walk that we were actually on, and also to tell us about her favourite walk.
We're walking across along the beach in Vancouver from Spanish Banks West, and we're walking east, looking into the city, which is bathed in this gorgeous colour, a rosy gold. Now, that's a quality of light that you get in Vancouver in the fall and the early winter that you don't actually get anywhere else. These particular colours with the blue sky, it's beautiful. It's very different than the quality of light that you'll get in summer. What's nice about it is it changes, because for right now the tide is fairly high, but sometimes the tide is a kilometer that edge, so that you can actually have long, 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 flat, flat, flat sections of sand. So it's completely different. You can walk a long way with the woods behind you and the ocean in front of you and the city in front of you. So it changes. You walk in this direction. Now when we walk in the other direction, we'll be looking towards the mountain and the open sea.
And how far is it from where we are approximately to the city?
I'd say about 6 miles. Well, you could walk a long way. Yeah. You'd have to walk some of it on a walking path. From here to Kitsilano all the way. It's just a beautiful walk. It's a very popular walk. It's a walk that people do either parts of. They go running. You'll see along over there. You can see on the pathway there's bicyclists, there's joggers, there'll be walkers. It's a great place for people to walk their dogs. On a Sunday, everybody will be out there with their entire family walking along. So it's a promenade, really, it becomes. Yeah. On the weekend, absolutely, it's a popular walk, yeah. My favorite walk is on Hornby Island, and it's the walk around Helliwell Park. Hornby Island is a small Gulf Island. It's in the Northern Gulf Island group, and it's between Vancouver Island and the mainland of British Columbia. And in order to go there, you have to go from the mainland to Vancouver Island, travel for about an hour, take a small ferry to Denman Island, and then take another small ferry to Hornby Island. So it's quite remote, but it's really only about 5 hours away from Vancouver. There's about 1,100 year-round people that live on Hornby Island. And then there are what they call the sort of temporary residents, the sort of summer residents, the people that actually spend summers there and whenever else they can there. So there's quite a few of us. And then there's the tourists as well. So there's a beautiful walk, which is it's called Helliwell. And you walk in through the woods, and you either take the right fork. If you take the right fork, you go through a Gary Oak Grove, and then you come upon these huge, beautiful bluffs full of golden grass, and it overlooks this lovely, huge Tribune Bay. And then you walk along the cliffs, and then you walk farther down, and then as you come around back towards the entrance of the park, you walk through an old-growth Douglas fir forest. So it's great. And you can always go through the forest first and then come back, but I always go the way where the bluffs are, because it's really the most dramatic way to start the walk.
So it's a fabulous walk. It's about 5 kilometers. And it's just a great, I can sometimes take it 3 times a day.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, an interview with Bernadette Cowie, Regional Director of the Way to Go program in British Columbia, Canada. Talking Walking is brought to you by Rethinking Cities Limited. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Please follow the links on the talkingwalking.net website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes at talkingwalking.net.